From the journals of Dr. John H. Watson, N.D. January 21st, 1887. The horrible tragedy in Spitalfields earlier this week has had some unexpected bonuses, not the least of which is ending a long period of boredom for my friend Sherlock Holmes. Now he can put that blasted needle away. The cocaine may relieve his anunai between clients, but it is no honeymoon in Paris for those of us who have to endure it. His moods range from manic to melancholy. He'll index documents for hours on end, or stare out the window for so long at a time, one may think he had died in his armchair. On Wednesday last, some 17 people were crushed to death in the panic following a false fire alarm at the Hebrew Dramatic Club in Princes Street. The press accounts claim that not long after, what might have been an unremarkable incident turned to terror because someone thought a gas leak to blame, and as a consequence cut off the supply. The action plunged the building into complete darkness, and the only way in or out is through a private residence which had been converted into a club. The play that night was in Hebrew, Spitalfields being where London's foreign Jews seemed to congregate. The proceeds were intended to benefit an ailing Jewish workman, but now money is needed for funeral costs. When I heard the reluctant trudge of a client up our well-worn stairs, I had no idea that Holmes and I would be drawn into the disaster's sequel. Three sad, reluctant knocks brought me to the door. To my surprise, the nervous, dejected man I admitted into our rooms had a familiar face, and it took me a moment to realize we had played rugby together in my army days, to pass the time between battles. "Hastings!" I cried. "Can it be you?" He gazed at me for a moment, smiled with recognition, and said,
"Upon my soul, it isn't John Watson, is it?
You played forward. They couldn't get a ball past you, could they?" Hastings had changed little over the past 15 years or thereabouts. His tie and tweeds marked him as an upper-middle-class Englishman, and he carried a black walking stick capped with a brass knob. In height, a head shorter than myself, but he would still be able to wear the old uniform, which I am humbled to admit I no longer can. "I haven't heard from you in ages," I said. "What brings you here?"
"A deeply distressing personal problem,"
said Holmes, rising, still in the mouse-grey dressing gown he had donned that morning.
"That much is evident from your expression. You are a cabinet maker and purveyor of home furnishings, I perceive."
"How could you know that?"
our guest asked.
"You are dressed too well for work in a standard woodshop, and you are dressed like a businessman. Quite successful, too, to judge from your new walking stick. Combine that with the lingering aroma of varnish. I conclude not only that you sell home furnishings, but you make some of them yourself."
"I can see you've warranted your reputation, Mr. Holmes. Yes, you are quite right. I made my beginning as a cabinet maker, but I now own my own establishment. I find the work relaxing and rewarding, and there is a certain pride in knowing I can compete with the best of them."
"I must make introductions," I said. "Mr. Sherlock Holmes, this is James Hastings, one of the finest goalies I have ever had the honour to serve."
"I must say, Watson, seeing you again is the first good thing to happen to me in days,"
said he.
"Pray, take a seat and give us the reason for your visit to our humble quarters,"
said Holmes as I placed a kettle on the Bunsen burner for tea.
"Please, do not spare us a single detail."
"It's my sister, Charlotte,"
said Hastings, who nervously smoothed his black moustache throughout the interview.
"You've heard of that horrible panic in Spitalfields earlier this week,